Some viewers may find the following video disturbing. Viewer discretion is advised.
Hello.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Shelby and James podcast, where we talk about life and a little bit everything in between. As always, I am James.
I'm Shelby.
And this is our wonderful podcast. So, Shelby, it's our first one. It's going to be a little bit rough. Tell the folks about yourself.
Well, I'm Shelby. I am married to James, of course. I have known him for almost 10 years. We've been married for almost 3, which is insane. We've been dating, well, not dating. We were dating for about 5 years. Holy cow, that's insane.
Oh, please. You know, it's funny when we talk about, you know, we've been married for almost 3 years. You know, we're still dating in a sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we still have that kind of newlywed type marriage happening here, you know, just because we haven't been together for as many years as some of these other people, you know, like our parents who have been married for, you know, 30 plus.
Exactly.
All right. Do you want to tell the story about how we met or should I?
Oh, goodness. Should we tell the one at school, or should we tell
the one at school how we first
so we first officially met through my brother, Travis. He introduced us. We had an issue with something he was having an issue with, I don't remember.
He was trying to buy lunch and his card wouldn't work.
See, he remembers the story more than I do. But we met that way, and then how else did we meet?
No, that was basically the story of how we met.
Basically how we met, yeah.
And then, you know, there was a little bit of time there where we didn't talk, and then I actually left, so I was I don't know how I want to put this here. You know, I had some relations with one of her friends. Stay for leaving off this podcast because it's not important here. And I actually thought I was being set up by her because Shelby texted me the one night trying to like reconnect, asking me how I was. And I, for the life of me, thought, no, this is a setup. And it's funny, too. You can even ask DeMarco, because I was sitting in my room at my parents' house, and I was playing video games, and I was like, nah, dude, this feels like a setup.
Mind you, I am in Wisconsin with friends for a weekend away. It was 4th of July weekend, actually. And we had gone out, and I came home after a night of fun with friends, and I was bored, and I was hanging out in bed and decided to send him a text. I think we texted for about an hour until I fell asleep. And then, yeah.
Long story short, we went on our first date to Chili's, and the rest is history.
Yes.
All right. So, Shelby, I got a question for you. All right. What is your favorite memory of us being together?
Oh, goodness. There are so many. The first one I would honestly say is when we found out we were having a baby. His reaction was kind of like, oh, shit.
Viewer discretion advised. I didn't throw the disclaimer in there because I wasn't sure how long you were going to go into this episode without swearing. Now you know who the potty mouth is out of the two of us.
Sorry, guys. That was one of my favorites because just your reaction after we found out, because I wasn't feeling well. And everyone, my girlfriend, even when we went for her bachelorette party, was like, you need to take when you get home. Because even her mom was like, you're pregnant. The second we found out from him, or about him, honestly, I was getting changed for bed and he's the one in the bathroom and goes, oh boy, I guess we gotta wait 9 months.
And I'll tell you what, I wouldn't trade it for a single day in the world because I love being a parent. I love being a dad. And, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, I've been an I was an uncle for so long. You know, so I had a chance to really, you know, get to know how to take care of kids, and not only that, but you know, just what are kids like? Because, you know, they say that, you know, you never know the experience until they're your own. That's honestly, you know, just one of the things that I love about being a dad is just waking up in the morning. Now, granted, I work really weird hours, but, you know, I come home from work when I work early and I get off early and I see, you know, our little year and a half year old, so excited to see me when I walk through the door, sometimes even more excited than you.
Honestly, yeah.
And, you know, just it kind of makes me laugh a little bit. You know, if I had to pick fondest memory for me and you, probably was that first Blackhawks game or second Blackhawks game that you and I went to. It was the Hawks were playing the Red Wings, and we were having so much fun. There were a few you know, Red Wings fans sitting around us that just wanted to chirp the entire game. Now, chirping is basically just talking smack in hockey language. But I remember, you know, we were down 2-0. Hawks come back and tie it, and then they end up winning, getting that empty net goal as well. And I remember me and you just laughing hysterically, looking at the lady behind us and saying, "Huh, I guess you don't have anything to say now, do you?" And, you know, she wanted to try to make a bunch of excuses. Like, what are you
doing? Mind you, this is going on all night during the game. And we are just getting frustrated because we're just like, okay, we get the point. Shut up. Let's just continue the game. So, yeah.
You know, and then, you know, the funny thing is, too, is like, you know, you think about the olden days, like in, you know, Chicago Stadium where the Blackhawks used to play. You know, if that lady would have tried that back then, she'd probably get her teeth punched in. I mean, think about it, though. I mean, you go to an opposing fan's arena, you know, you kind of want to not pick fights with the fans. And I mean, you and I are no stranger to that.
No.
We've went to the Allstate Arena a couple times and, you know, really had a couple bad experiences there seeing our IceHawks play the Wolves. But yeah, you know what? I'm really glad that we're getting a chance to talk about our memories here. I kind of want to switch gears and talk, you know, we talk about, you know, wanting to open up our marriage, you know, intellectually. I don't mean the other way. Before anybody says anything weird, we are not swingers. We are not looking to find swingers or other partners in our relationship here. But what would you say is the biggest strength of our marriage?
Honestly, to me, it's our communication has gotten a lot better. We still struggle with it, but we definitely work on it each day together to kind of talk and communicate about certain things or just how our day's going or how's little man going or how he's doing. Also, to me, it's also just being able to have that time at night where he goes to bed and we have that hour to like 2 or 3 hours together to kind of just decompress from the day and hang out and watch TV and relax. And
among other things. I'm totally kidding.
Usually end up watching The Wire and it's like, oh, 11:30 at night. We're like, we probably should go to bed. But usually by that time, you're already out here playing with DeMarco. I'm calling you out right now, DeMarco. So.
Okay. So I'm going to go in a completely different direction because I don't feel like that's the biggest strength in our marriage. I think our biggest strength is the fact that we're able to say, I'm sorry when we're wrong. And usually that ends up being you.
I usually apologize first. So.
That's because, you know, you fucked up. And good on you for learning that self-accountability that so many other women in this world lack.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Well, no. It's...
Before I get painted as a misogynist here who is like, you know, I'm not the Andrew Tate of this relationship, okay? So everybody relax. take a chill pill, snort a Xanax, whatever you want to do. We're just having a conversation here, okay?
Honestly, I know everyone's like, oh, usually he says sorry first. Like, I've seen a lot of it where it's he says sorry or she doesn't say sorry first because it's always his fault. There's always that quote where it's like, she knows she's wrong, but she just wants to continue to argue with
her. And I just want you to know,
she's not right.
I just want you to know right now, I do not believe in the happy wife, happy life quotations. It's got to be happy house, happy spouse, because, you know, I look at it this way. If you can't be you, we can't be we. And, you know, you see a lot of couples struggling with this nowadays, which we're going to get into a little bit later. You know, maybe some advice, you know, that we have for couples who may be struggling that are looking for a laugh, but also maybe some of that, you know, being able to look within and saying, okay, really get down to the root of the problem of their relationship. Part of where I go with this is, you know, we're talking about weaknesses within our marriage and having the, you know, self-awareness to be able to talk about this stuff. I think one of the biggest weaknesses in our marriage is our communication, because we get pissed off at each other and then we shut down. And I'm not saying that that's necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah.
Okay. I understand that, you know, both of us really don't really care for conflict, even though some of us like to argue more than others, and some of that, you know, basically throwing up the walls and, you know, that defense mechanism, you know, could be attributed to the way we were raised, right, wrong, or indifferent, right?
Exactly.
It's everybody has their own way of, you know, when conflict happens, what they're going to do.
How they react is really the one thing for couples. It's the hardest part is if you're brought up a certain way and you get yelled at or you're having a conversation, but the person doesn't like the way you're speaking, that's how you shut down, or just communicating to each other in a certain way where you're not trying to yell at the other person about how you're feeling or, how that situation is going. Like, that's the one thing, like, yes, communication is like something we are getting better about, but sometimes we do have that weakness of like maybe a week or two down the road where we're both like, what the fuck is going on? Why are we yelling at each other?
Well, and I think not to like be like totally cliche-ish here or anything, you know, it goes back to that old saying, you know, it's not all sunshine and rainbows. I mean,
it's honestly not. It's like everyone paints this picture of marriage. It's like, oh, you're going to be happy forever. But there are days where you're like, I want to freaking shove a pillow over your face and just.
Believe me, that feeling's mutual. There are days, you know, we talk about not letting our intrusive thoughts win, you know.
There are days where those kind of win and you're like, how do I deal with this without it happening?
There are some nights where, you know, we get so mad at each other that, you know, I'll have dreams about choking you out in an octagon like I'm in the UFC or something. Now, obviously, that would never happen in real life. You know, I'm of the firm belief that our son needs the both of us to succeed. All right. Now, this is going to cause a little bit of controversy here, but I want to ask the question, and I will be brutally honest with you if you're brutally honest with me. What if you could change something about me, would that be?
Oh, that is a hard one. Honestly, when you wrote that question, I was like, shit, what would I change about him?
I think what she's trying to say is I'm perfect. I will never change. And there's nothing you can do to change me.
Hold on. No. Honestly, to me, it's the stupidest thing. And girls, I know you probably have thought of this too. It's putting the toilet seat down. It's what drives me fucking nuts.
Why don't you put the toilet seat up?
Because I don't need to put the toilet seat up. I just put it down and I'm done.
No, you know what?
And the other thing that drives me absolutely crazy. If your husband shaves or anything, please let me know if they still leave a mess or anything everywhere. Just saying. Because he is horrible at cleaning up his hair because it is everywhere by the end of the night.
Is it my hair or is it yours?
No, because it's your hair and it ends up in the bathtub, in the sink. It ends up everywhere.
Well, I have two words to say to you about that. Bite me. Okay, so you found out that I'm not perfect. Mm-hmm. All right. You know, I think if I were to change one thing about you, and again, we're talking, we're having a conversation, it's a healthy dialogue. Mm-hmm. You know, it's something that I need to get better about, too. But there are times we'll be laying in bed late at night, and instead of, like, having, like, healthy conversations, we're both buried in our phones. Mm-hmm. And my wife, if you're, you know, if your wife or girlfriend's like this, I want to know about it, too. Where they send you 18 million fucking TikToks a day. And, hey, did you watch that video I sent you? Well, which one, honey? Because I really want to know which one you're talking about. So usually I'll get home and she'll be like, and then she'll re-show me the video. And I'm just, it makes me laugh. You know, I think it's hilarious. And, you know, other than that, you know, among other things, they're a little bit more sensitive that, you know, we're not going to open up about. I mean, we've had conversations
about it. We have, yeah.
But, you know, we don't need to, let's be nice. We don't have to go there.
That's, no. That's for a more sensitive later.
All right. So, I think that's a great dialogue to have. Now, what about me drew you to me?
Honestly, it would have been the first time that we met was when Travis had that issue. It was just the way, like, how respectful you were of me and how you asked, but also, oh my goodness. I'm gonna also say it was kind of just your personality and your softness and just how respectful you were to me when we first met. Not the first time, but the second time. Like, the second time we hung out and, like, went to dinner, and how respectful you were and how calm and, like, collective you were at that point. Like, I knew we were both nervous because we had been dating each other and we really didn't know how one of us would react to the other person. And we had both been in shitty relationships before. So it was like, why don't we just kind of see where this goes, and then about 5 years or so down the road, we're married and have a kid, and it's like, I still think about that first time that we hung out at Chili's, and it was in your old, your Pontiac? Is it the Pontiac?
Yeah, I used to have a Pontiac Grand Prix GT that I loved.
This thing was so loud when the pipe broke, it was like a freaking freight train going down the street.
For those of you who are not familiar with cars over here, the pipe she's referring to is the exhaust pipe.
Yes.
And I laughed because it actually, one of the clamps broke on my way to work. I was laying floors at the time.
No. The second time we were getting on the highway and it snapped going down, was it 90?
I don't remember it that way, but
We were coming home from Barrington because he used to play hockey, of course. He used to play hockey and we would go to Barrington
Hills. Barrington Ice Arena.
Barrington Hills Ice Arena. And we would go there and we were coming home from there and we were on I-90. And I remember you're going, this car is getting a little too loud. We get home and it's sagging in the middle. It had snapped in the middle of the pipe of the exhaust. And I was like, what the heck? But the way he picked me up was like my favorite. That's what I'm going to say is when he picked me up, it was funny because I mentioned my mom in this one. It was funny because when we first went out, she's like, why didn't you let him open the door? I was like, Mom, I can handle open the door. The second we got to the date, that's when he was like, I'm going to open the door. I'm like, okay, cool.
Yeah. You also want to tell them about that time I met your dad?
Oh my God. Well, how do I don't even know how to describe it though. Like, when you met my dad, he didn't realize, okay, so James is 6'5", okay? My dad is, what, 5'11"?
3'2".
Sorry, Dad. He is 5'11". So when he walked through the door, my dad was like, what the hell is this? Why is he so tall? My mom, mind you, she's 5'3", with, like, my height. And she was even like, did you bring a giant to the house? What is this?
Sure, Shrek and Donkey. or as I like to call it, Wreck-It Ralph and his... What the hell is this girl's... What's that girl's name?
Wreck-It Ralph. But Pearl is like, I don't know, 7, 8 years old. I don't know.
But she's about your size. So that's where I'm going with this. so it made me laugh because like then her dad and I, you know, we just get into this conversation.
Mind you, it's 20 minutes and we were supposed to go to dinner about what, a half hour before? And I was like, we gotta go. Because if I leave these two alone, they're gonna be talking the whole night.
But it just goes to show you that, you know, when it comes to, you know, having a good relationship with, you know, your father, mm-hmm. I absolutely do,
mm-hmm.
you know, never mind. That sounds pause. That's all I'm going to say on it. Pause.
A good father-in-law relationship with the son-in-law.
Absolutely. I was trying to think of how I wanted to word that without pissing off a certain group of people. That's as far with that as I'm going. So, you know, we've went on, you know, a bunch of dates, you know, the trips and stuff that we've went on together, you know, the Ice Hogs games to the Blackhawks mm-hmm. games, you know.
It's our little adventures.
I really can't say you and I have had a bad date.
No, we've had our luck with very good dates. I mean, we anytime we go out, we don't really have a hard time with just going out together or with little man. Like, I'm just going to say this. I know parents are probably like, well, you have a kid. But at the same time, he is the most well-behaved child at a restaurant. Like, he is so quiet that, like, James and I can have a conversation. And he's getting to the point where he's starting, like, wanting to vocalize more. And he will try and join in. But he knows, like, if mom and dad are having a conversation, he just kind of plays with whatever he's got. He usually colors or he's got a toy.
You know, most people say they're raising a Bluey or a Bingo. You know, if you're familiar with the show
Bluey.
We are raising a Muffet.
We actually have a Muffet in our household because he is a terror. The second this little child wakes up, it is go, go, go until about nap time and then goes and goes and goes until probably bedtime because it is just...
I'm so happy they can't put toddlers on no-fall lists or terror watch list.
Child would be on that list because he is just a crazy 21 month old who is wanting to vocalize. I mean, this morning, mind you, I have a migraine. I have blue light glasses on because that is the only thing that's making me go through right now because I can function. He was screaming at the top of his lungs just because today he wanted to be a dinosaur, or I think he was trying to be a pterodactyl, something. I don't know. But I was, like, ready to just scream out because it was so loud in here.
Do I need to get the Bruce Buffer cameo where we can do tell of the tape with you and your toddler?
Oh, my God. Well, it was funny because we were trying to test out our microphones, and then he's coming up, and he's going, hello? Hello? Hi? Like, he was trying to make sure he could hear himself, too. And it was funny, because once he heard himself talking back, he was kind of like, what in the world? Dad, what's going on?
Definitely. All right, so I kind of want to close out this marriage segment by asking one question. What advice do you have for, and I know, for these people, these are opinions, okay? None of us are medical professionals. We're merely having a conversation right now. I have to fucking throw this out here before somebody wants to go, you haven't been married long enough. You don't know what you're talking about. Well, I don't care. We're just talking about, you know.
Mind life, you, life I think everything. It's not just because you've been married for as long as you have. I honestly, it would be how long you've known the person. To me, that's what it is. It's not just about how long you've been married. It's how long you've been together with that person and how you've grown over the years you've been together. We got married. Well, we didn't get married, but we got engaged after, what, a year and a half?
Okay, but here's the thing. And here's where we kind of had to stop, right? Mm-hmm. So we started dating in July of 2019.
Yes.
March of 2020 was when COVID hit.
Yes.
And, you know, trying to maintain that spark and that relationship mm-hmm. during COVID, I think was, you know, really one of the hardest things.
Parts of our relationship was trying to make it through COVID because it was
I had a little bit more going on to try to make it through COVID. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not getting into that because that's a conversation for another day. But my question to you is, now that we have that off our chat, what advice do you have to those who may be struggling that are looking for answers within themselves?
Like themselves or in their...
Like in their marriage, but you know, if you and I are having issues... And you're thinking about it from within. What advice do you have to that person?
Honestly, just talk to your spouse. Like, that's the one thing that I always tell my friends who get married or don't really understand how...
Which time? that just sort of slipped out.
I tell them to communicate. It's not even if you're married, it's if you're dating someone or you want to get to know someone. Honestly, that one thing is communicating how you're feeling, how you want to take on a situation that is bothering you, or how you're feeling physically, mentally, emotionally. That's something that I am working on myself with you, is opening up more and trying to talk about certain things that are bothering me or how I'm feeling that day. Or there are points where he's like, what the hell is wrong with you today? I'm like, I don't know. My hormones or something. I don't know what's going on.
Well, and like the thing that I'll say that like hits me the most about having these conversations with you sometimes is because like, I'd like to think of myself as one of the most supportive people mm-hmm. to you, you know, and I will simply sit here and ask you, hey, what's wrong? And you'll be like, nothing, I'm fine. And I literally have to beat it metaphorically out of you to ask you what the issue is. Mm-hmm. And like, I'm not going to lie, as a man, that's frustrating mm-hmm. as all hell. You know, especially when you're married, because I'm supposed to be that one person that you can come mm-hmm. to. You know, everybody has that go-to person that's outside mm-hmm. of your spouse. Mm-hmm. You know, but I think it's really important, too, to keep your problems within your marriage. Mm-hmm. You know, I know some people, you know, who like to overshare.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you and I start getting into shouting matches and we start going to said people, mm-hmm. You know, we've had an instance, not with us, but with other people where you've told me some stuff and then, you know, you say, oh, no, we're fine. We made up. And now I don't like that person. Yeah. And now I don't give them another chance. Yeah. So your advice is communication. My advice would be, you know, as long as it's not something.
Mind you, keep it clean.
I was gonna. Don't interrupt me. A man is talking. I'm kidding. My biggest piece of advice would be, you know, if it's something that's not, you know, the other person's red line, you know, we're not talking about infidelity here. We're talking about just simple spats and stuff like that. You know, don't be afraid to say I'm sorry. Don't be afraid to become vulnerable. You know, if it's something that you're dealing with where you're stressed, and you don't feel like you have that support system. Now, you could be very wrong. Like, for example, you know, there was a time, you know, last year where I was stressed and I didn't come to you about it. And it almost wrecked us. And, you know, just if you don't feel like you can talk to your spouse, hey, that's a problem that you need to mm-hmm. work on. But you need to find that person in your life that you trust. And you need to sort of sit down and have somebody who's going to be the voice of reason. You know, and really try to go ahead and help you through that. I hope to God that's your spouse. Mm-hmm. But realize, too, if it's not anything that's a basically past the red line of ending your marriage or relationship, you know, such as cheating, lying about shit, you know, because, you know, lying is one of the worst things you can do to your spouse.
Exactly. Yeah.
So realize if it's little stuff, no matter what, you can always come back from it.
Exactly.
It may take a little bit of time and a little bit of effort, but you can always come back from
it. Yeah, you can always work on it together with that, your spouse or your boyfriend or your girlfriend or just your partner. You can definitely talk to and try and work on how you're feeling. Like, that's the one thing that with him, it's the same way. Like, I'm slowly getting you to open up to me. And it's always, to me, like, I've always seen that the man has to be the strong point of a relationship or of a marriage. And it's like, he can be vulnerable too. I can't talk today. Can be vulnerable too with you, but also talking to you about like how he's feeling. Or sometimes I can see it on your face or on his face where it's like, something's bothering him. What's going on? Like, he might say, I'm fine. Like, it's okay. But I know, like, the second he shuts down or he's quiet, it's like, no, what's going on? What's bothering you that's making you go quiet or on your face? Like, I can tell when you're tired, or I can tell when you've got something on your mind, because you just kind of go quiet and you do this thing with, like, you girls, I don't know if you see it or not on your guy or whoever, when they talk or when they're quiet, you can kind of read their face with, like, the way their eyebrows, he's doing it right now, the way his eyebrows or the way he's, like, looking out in the distance or just kind of zoned out sometimes, where if you're trying to talk to him, he's just, like, in a different dimension. That's something where it's like, hey, come back and talk to me. What's going on? What's in your mind? Like, what is, I always ask you, I'm always like, what's on your mind? And then you're finally like, tell me what's going on from A to Z. And I'm like, okay.
So I don't want that piece of advice. I'm not saying it's necessarily you here, but I'm going to have a lot of guys relate to this. Mm-hmm. If you're not trying to start an argument, and the problem asks you what the problem is, what do you say to that? And why? So here's my thing. Here's why I have such an issue with this, is because, you know, as men, we're taught that we need to, you know, bottle everything in. We need to keep everything mm-hmm. and sort of shove it down, you know. And again, that's where I talk about finding that person that you can, you know, share these details with, you know, that of shit that may be going on in your life that's not going right. It's stuff that you can always come back from. But circling back to that, you know, we talk about just, you know, the stigmas. Because realistically, and I'm not saying you, I found a good one. I know a lot of you found good ones. But if a man is feeling down, nobody gives a shit. You know, and I'm not trying to be all, like, anti-feminist bullshit here. I'm just saying how I feel, you know. I do feel like men are very conditionally loved. Again, not you. I'm just saying, just in general, that's how it's perceived in society. But I think these have been great, some great points. Mm-hmm. I want to get into parenthood here. And I want to, you know, we talk about, you know, having, you know, such a fun time, you know, raising our little guy. You know, what do you think are some of your strengths as a parent?
Honestly, to me, it's watching.
I want you to lie to me. Yes.
Honestly, it's me. It's to me, of course, being the mom, but also like a teacher perspective, is seeing him grow and the way he's starting to communicate more with talking. And of course, we do teach Jimmy, our little guy, we teach him to talk and also sign back to us. If he doesn't know how to say it, he just talks in gibber.
Hold on. You teach him that, though. I don't know, you know, American Sign Language. You know, if anybody's going to teach him anything, I'm going to teach my kid how to curse, probably. You know, and it's something that I've been trying to get better on. Now, luckily,
mind you, I'm doing the same right now because I about dropped the F-bomb in front of him, but I kind of turned around and just walked away because it didn't want that issue today.
Apparently, they're hard words to pronounce because he definitely has an issue, you know, saying them. You know, So you talk about, you know, that from a teacher perspective and, you know, having fun watching him develop.
Yes.
Probably one of my fondest, you know, or actually, you know, we're not talking about that yet. You know, my biggest strength as a parent, you know, I would say, you know, I'm firm as a parent. I'm not unfair though.
No.
You know, and you know, we talk about having patience, right?
Yeah, that's
So
the one thing that we've been working on together is kind of having patience with him. I know it's this age between the one and twos is the hardest. It's like having a teenager at 21 months who thinks he's like 18 years old and has a full-on meltdown just because you didn't give him the right goldfish or the drink that he wanted. It's that's just parenthood. Sometimes I just got to look at him and I walk away. And mind you can ask my teacher friends, you can ask any of our family who are like, what are you going to do? I'm like, I'm going to let him have that temper tantrum and then he'll come back and he's fine 5 minutes later. It's like, I'm not going to tell him to not have that temper tantrum. He's working on his emotions and seeing him that way as a parent. It's like, okay, we're doing something right if he's able to have these temper tantrums, but also being able to be like, okay, are you done? Now we can talk, and now you're calmed down after you just had a 5 minute temper tantrum on the floor about something.
well,
So.
you know, it goes back to, you know, I go back to, you know, some of the ways that I was raised. And, you know, I've been able to sort of have these conversations, you know, with my dad, because he was the disciplinarian of the family. He's the one you don't want to cross, the scary guy who's gonna give you a pop in the mouth if you deserve it. And then, you know,
Great.
I think we as parents need to be able to get back to that. You know, obviously not beating the shit out of
No.
your children,
No.
not anything like that.
Just
Just
being stern and having discipline with them is like something that we want to put, not put into Jimmy, but kind of show him that if issues are happening or he's not listening, we want to redirect him or tell him, hey, this is not a good choice. Let's take a step back. Or kind of just give him, if he's going to start crying because we're telling him what to do, that's a normal emotion to being told something he's not supposed to be doing.
Well, so, and I guess that's my next question then. So, you know, we sit here, we talk about this, you know, I definitely think, I don't want to call it gentle parenting, because to an extent it is, but to an extent, no.
No.
Going back to my last point, because I realized I didn't finish that. I'm not trying to be Gary Busey all around this here. You know, I've had conversations with my dad, you know, and he always used to tell me at least, you know, that I wanted you to have your temper tantrums at home, and so that when we went out, I expected you to be on your best behavior. And I definitely think that's how we need to get back to as a society, because as you've seen, this so-called timeout generation, this me, 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 me sense of entitlement,
Yeah.
you know, the got all the participation trophies along the way, kids are struggling right now in life,
Yeah.
you know.
It's not easy for the kids who've grown up also like I'm not calling them out, but it's also COVID babies. Like a lot of COVID babies are having issues trying to just be in like a society where they can talk to like just being able to do anything. Like I worked with kids who were completely COVID kids, and you were just like you saw the difference of ones who were born before, and then during COVID, it's the hardest part because you're like, now we got to try and figure out how we can have these kids communicate with us
Well,
or
it goes along the lines of socialization, right?
exactly.
So, you know, we sit here and, you know, like you and I, we were socialized well as kids, you know, going to school, playing sports, you know, this and that. You know, I think as parents nowadays, you know, the kids who are behind necessarily with those socialization skills are having to work that much harder. And some of them aren't putting the work in.
No.
Let's be real. So then, I mean, and it's only been, you know, 21 months. Do you have a favorite memory of your kiddo?
For him, it was when he started, well, when he first said Mama and Dada was my absolute favorite, because that was the one where we had been working with him since he was, what, about 10 months old? And we had been like teaching him how to talk. That was one of my favorites. Is the second he said Dada, he said Dada before Mama, which was common. I mean,
suck it.
You know, it was so, it made me tear up because it was so nice hearing him, his little voice where he was going Dada, Dada, or he was saying Mama. Like now he doesn't stop. Like I'll have to record it, but he, the one day was doing everyone's name. Like he was doing Grandma and Grandpa, he was doing my, like, Mimi and Opa and Rowan.
Yeah, my and parents.
And the dog. And my brother, of course, his nickname is TJ. So he was he just started saying TJ. But he says Bubba and Papa, who are his great grandparents. And it's just like the way he's starting to talk more, or he's asking, or we're working on the, what would they be called? What are they called? Manners. We're kind of working on, like, what do we say? Like, he's starting to say thank you with his signs.
Something you know nothing about, but it's okay. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just playing.
But just the way he's starting to talk more is one of my favorite memories, is him talking.
Yeah. I got to tell you my favorite memory here. We got these little hockey nets. You know, what did we get those, like 3 months ago-ish?
It was about, yeah.
So we got these hockey nets and I'm, you know, working on, you know, hockey with my kiddo here. You know, Jimmy's been very fond of hockey, football as well.
Mind you, this is all day. I hear hockey, hockey, football, football. By about 4 o'clock today, I was like, no football, no hockey right now. Like,
I was done. And Blackhawks.
And Blackhawks, yeah. They're still working on the other ones.
You know. But we were playing, you know, over here. And I looked to where he was then to where he is now. You know, teaching him, hey, you know, put the puck in the net. You scream, yay, and put your arms up in the air. And he actually does it now, you know. So kind of like piggybacking off your point, you know, that development, you know, and watching your kid grow, watching him learn his emotions, you know, we're in the fun stage, you know, I don't know what it's going to be like when he's older.
Yeah.
You know, cause kids grow through phases, you know, where they really love their parents. And then there's other times where they just absolutely want nothing to do with us. They
despise us, of course.
You know, but you know, and he's learning to test his boundaries, you know.
He's at the testing boundary stage where it's hard when the one parent's been with them all day and it's like by the time the next parent gets home, it's like, I have a chilly moment from Bluey where it's like, I just need 20 minutes to myself. And usually that's either to go cook dinner or kind of just take a step away. And usually I'll go, like, if it's kind of a time where he's home or he's going to do something and I need to, like, go take a shower for, like, 10 minutes, he takes him for a little bit and kind of lets me relax. And what was it last night? He was like, okay, you just hang out. I'm going to take him and we're going to go make dinner. This one was running back and forth, being a nut job. Mind you, it's the week of Christmas. It was just the week of Christmas. We're all in that stage of like, what day is it today? What time is it? Like, we are all thrown off because we've been going since Sunday of last week. So we finally were able to kind of have a day or 2 days this weekend to kind of just relax.
And yeah. So Let me not to like cut you off here. What would you say has been the thing you've struggled with the most as a parent?
I know a lot of moms will probably say this. It was the beginning of after having him was the postpartum. I think it was postpartum that hit the hardest because I was home with him and it was like, I had that feeling in my head of like, what if I'm not going to be a good mom? What if I'm not going to be, but to now it's like, I did a good job. Like yes, he was in daycare with me. Mind you, I'm about 3 classrooms down most days or I'm with him. It's watching someone else raise your kid is what frustrated me. It was like, he's going to go to daycare. He's not going to remember what's going on. It's a lot harder after a mom has a child that you, parents or moms who have struggled with this, it's watching someone else raise your kid when you're working. That was the hard part for me, was when we go back to work, I'm not going to be this mom that everyone's like, oh, you're going to be with him all the time. the second I got back to work, I was like, why the hell am I back here yet? Like, I should have taken a little bit longer to kind of just focus on being a mom. Of course, the face you just made at me, no. Just to myself, I had to remember that I'm still there with him. I'm still being able to see him and watch him grow. I'm so thankful for the teachers he had that were there to just send me pictures or talk, because I was in there on break. I was in there sometimes when they needed me. That was the hard part, was all of the postpartum, because it was just going back to work, and that was being by myself a little bit. That was the hard part for me, honestly.
And what's your message to those who are dealing with postpartum issues?
Honestly, talk to a spouse, talk to a friend, talk to your family.
How about your doctor?
Your doctor, yes. Talk to your doctor if you're struggling with your postpartum stuff. Honestly, I wanted to, but at the same time, I kind of do this thing where I just shut down and kind of just put it in my head and push it back. But it started to affect myself, but also our relationship. And that's when I kind of was finally just opening up about everything with you. And you were kind of like, what is going on? And that's when I finally was like, I'm done. Like, I know a lot of moms will sit there and say the same thing, and they're just like, well, why should we have to talk about it? Why? Like, no one's going to listen. There are people out there who will listen. I leaned on my husband. I leaned on my mom. I leaned on my friends to kind of just get myself through what we were going through, or what I was going through. Honestly, that's what I would tell them.
Yeah. And I would say one of the things that I struggle with, you know, as a parent, you know, and granted, it's not through any faults of my own why I'm not around as much as, you know, Shelby is with him, you know, but there will be, you know, days where he's crying and I don't know what he wants. I don't know what he needs. And it kind of tears me up inside that I don't feel like I can help him. Now, granted, I have all the answers and I know how to help him, you know, but I just get in my head sometimes that there's just sometimes I can't, you know, I feel like I can't type thing.
Yeah.
So, well, good. I'm glad we had a chance to, you know, talk about, you know, parenthood and everything like that. So, second to last segment here. We'll make this a little bit shorter.
Okay.
Let's talk about the dating scene today.
Oh, boy.
So, and hypothetically, of course, nothing is happening between us to where this would have to happen. Mm-hmm. But if you had to, could you date and find love in 2025?
I'm going to be straightforward. Absolutely fucking not. I would stay single the rest of my life, because dating nowadays, girls, I give you props on trying to find someone who's actually like functioning fully at this point, because trying to talk to any other man is like trying to talk to a door. It's, to me, it's like, no. Mm-mm.
Okay, so I can't think of a reason why I could be able to do that. If that were to ever happen, fuck it. I'm going back to being a womanizer and not giving a shit about it. And to my brothers out there, you know, feminist over here wants to talk about men are not easy to talk to. Women have unrealistic expectations. And, you know, where I talk about that is, and I'm not trying to throw shade at women as a whole, because I know this isn't all of you ladies. Got to have 6 feet tall, be 6 inches, and, you know, 6+ inches, and make a 6-figure income. I mean, it's just kind of ridiculous in these day and age. So, you know, I would say from the standpoint of what's stopping me from, you know, what would stop me from doing so is like just the fact that like the dating scene today is just ridiculous.
It is.
You know, I'm a man. I like having relations with women. Okay. We all, Shelby and I both know this, you know, not that I'm trying to get, you know, too vulgar to anything here. You know, 30-year-old guys still have that sex drive going, whatever you want to call it. But it seems like in today's day and age, that's all anything is. You know, you look at dating websites like Tinder, you know, all these Bumble, all these other ones, you know, that's really where people find each other nowadays. And then when they get hurt, it's the biggest issue in the world. And, you know, another reason why I wouldn't want to date today is because, like, you know, you look at men and women as a whole, everybody's got baggage, you know, and there's nobody that can just wipe the slate clean. I get keeping those walls up until, you know, you feel comfortable with somebody, but there are some women and even some men, this is a cultural problem. This isn't gender specific. You know, who just totally can't communicate. They're idiots. And, you know, talking to you, Gen Alpha or whatever, Gen Z.
The Gen Z, Gen Alpha, like.
Well, actually, hold on. Let me rephrase that, because I'm pretty sure that Gen Alpha is not even 18. I don't know. I think
Gen Alpha, how old are you right now during this year? Because we don't even know.
I'm not trying to sound like an R. Kelly, a Drake, or a Diddy. All right, that's where I'm coming from with that. You know, I'm to that age, and you know this by now.
It's 2010 to 20 or 2010 to the mid 2020s.
Okay, so I'm actually talking about millennials and Gen Z. Okay, before anybody wants to start throwing R. Kelly gifts my way, I'm you know, simple misspoke. You know, I guess my question for you is, what's the biggest problem with people today in trying to date?
Honestly, it's like, of course, I've got girlfriends that are dating and who want to settle down. It's just trying to find that right person to have a relationship with. It's either the baggage, or they've been cheated on, or it's the
single motherhood.
Yeah, that's the hard part. It's like all of my girlfriends who are dating, it's like, most of them will come to me for advice, and it's like, how do you guys make it work? Sometimes I tell them, it's not easy being married. It's not the sunshine and rainbows, like we said before. It's, you have to have the communications with that person. And communicating, I feel like, is the hardest part. One of my girlfriends was like, someone had ghosted me. And it's like, how would I respond to that if I was in her position? It's like, you need to be able to talk to them, or if that person's not interested, then just be like, all right, cool, I'm done. Like,
cut your losses and move on.
Exactly. It's the generation now, it's because of these. It's because of our cell phones. It's like, if they're texting you, I can throw the phone and be like, you're done, or just not text you back. Like,
or, you know, it goes along the lines of two and a lot of the other things that are wrong with society nowadays is everybody needs that sense of gratification. And, you know, social media is literally one of the biggest downfalls of society nowadays. You know, you think about even, you know, 20 years ago, and I know I was 10, you know, but how did most people meet? You actually had to go places, and you actually had to talk to each other.
Exactly. You either met them at school, or you met them out, like, with friends at a mall.
I'm not talking about us. I'm talking about, like, adults.
That's what I'm saying. It's like,
they went to the bar.
They went to the bar, or they met, like, in college. Yes, I'm saying us. But at the same time, we met at school. A lot of, like, our parents' generation, or my grandparents' generation, you met, like, going out with your friends to the mall, or to the movies, or to, like, dinner or something. It was completely different back then than it is now, because you have these cell phones where you can look up someone on Facebook if you saw them out in, like, downtown or somewhere you're just working. Like, you can look them up and text them on their Facebook, or you get their number. But it's, at the same time, it's like, it's not like the older generations where you got to talk to them, or you went up to them and had a conversation with them.
You know, and let's address the elephant in the room too. And it's more prevalent that I see in women than men. What's something that a lot of women have nowadays? OnlyFans.
OnlyFans, yeah.
So these are their women these are women who are exploiting themselves for money, but at the same time, they're expecting, like, let's say, for example, you know, if Shelby had an OnlyFans.
Which I do not, just saying. We do not have any of that.
At Shelby and James Hicks, starting tomorrow. No, I'm just kidding. nobody wants to see that.
No.
You know, but it goes along the lines of, like, you know, a lot of these things are supposed to be, I don't know how to describe this, you know, but there used to be a time where it all meant something. And I'm sorry, am I going to date you if I can see your butthole for $3.99 on OnlyFans? No. Right. There used to be a thing called self-respect and modesty that I feel like in these newer generations, you're not seeing.
You're not seeing it at all.
You know, when I feel bad for these kids who are kids of these parents who, you know, have those OnlyFans accounts who, because one of these days, right, because the internet is so accessible,
yeah,
you know, kids at their school, they're going to, you know, come There's across
gonna
this.
There's going to be a day where one of the kids from that school is going to look her up and be like,
haha, I saw your mom's butthole.
It's like, why would you want your friend, like your kids' friends to see that? Or your kids to see that when, like, come on. Like, that to me just frustrates me. It's like, why would you do that to yourself? Like, honestly, if
self-gratification.
If you've got that self-confidence, by all means, go ahead. But at the same time, you need to think about the future down the road when you have kids or your spouse or someone goes to find this or just it randomly pops up somehow.
So we blame the women for having it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm blaming a lot of men for giving them the market to have it.
Exactly.
The rise of simps are just completely out of this world.
Yeah.
I have never, nor will I ever, pay for an OnlyFans subscription.
No.
You know, mostly because, you know, I can see that whenever I want to for free.
Mm-hmm.
Why would I pay, you know, another one, you know, and that's the thing too. You know, I love this about you is that, you know we can go out in public, you know, the eyes might wander a little bit, but we always have a rule. You can look, don't touch.
Exactly.
And, you know, I laugh, you know, not that I'm someone with low self-esteem. You know, I have pretty high confidence, right? You know, but that one day, the last time we went to Chili's, and you're like, that girl was checking you out. And I'm like, no.
Oh.
First of all, I'm fat as fuck. Okay. I am certainly nothing to look at besides being, you know, fat with a beard, you know, sure. I laugh about that when, you know, you tell me things like that because. Yeah. It's not anything I would ever expect.
No. And it's like, to us, it's kind of like, oh, this girl's checking him out. Like, what the fuck? But then it's like, wait, why do I need to worry about that when he's married to me? But at the same time, it's like, that's the confidence for us. It's like, oh, shit, he's getting checked out. Like, what the fuck is going on?
But that's kind of where, you know, we know that, you know, neither one of us would want to hurt the other person. At least I would hope not.
No.
No, I'm kidding. You married up. All right, let's be honest. I'm kidding. You know, that's why we have our hall pass lists, you know. Because let's be real here, honey. You have no shot at Charlie Hunnam. I have no shot with Kate Beckinsale.
Oh, God.
All right. You know, so I think, like, people nowadays, get off the dating apps.
Mm-hmm.
Get off the OnlyFans.
Yeah.
You know, you can get off the OnlyFans. The internet has everything forever, whether you like it or not.
Exactly.
The good and the bad, right? So I think we need to stop as a society acting so entitled, saying, well, look what that person has over there. That person, you know, posting all these pictures of themselves with their new Porsche, new designer bag, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Stop. And I'm going to say this nicely, so viewer discretion is advised. Stop giving a fuck what other people think about you and just be yourself.
Exactly.
That's my biggest message to people right now. Nobody cares about what celebrities do or musicians or anything like that. Professional athletes. Okay, that's another issue that we have in society right now is we are giving celebrities way too much hopefully, you know, care and hoping to want to be like them one day.
Yeah.
You know, granted, the money would be nice. I'm not going to sit here and act like money ain't shit because, you know, I would love to have it.
Mm.
You know, as we were talking the other day about how pissed I was that somebody from California, you know, just had to win the Mega Millions. Yada, yada, yada. So be it. So I think we can both agree. I mean, especially you and I have baggage now. Because if we ever split up, we're single parents. Mm-hmm. You know, we do well. We do well in that category. But, you know, I would never want to have that happen.
No.
So till death do us part. So I'm glad we established that, you know, we're undateable. Obviously, this next question is not suggestive. I'm asking from a non-suggestive perspective here. What would you consider as your biggest turn on? That, like, makes you light up about me.
Honestly, when you enter the room, it's like, to me, when I see you, I know, like, my person is here and I can go to them. Like, it's always, there's always that video where it's like, the girl's got this million things going through the head, her head, and the second her boyfriend or husband gives her that hug, everything just quiets. Because you have that safe person to go to. And sometimes, like I do, it's like, I love the fact that, like, if I need a hug and just to be held, like, that's my favorite part of you, is like, you will hold me until I let go.
And usually,
I feel like a Disney character saying that because that's what Disney does. But
and usually, you
to
know,
me, that's my favorite.
I gave you that hug. I don't sit there and try to search for it with you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I would say probably, you know, my biggest turn on about you is your smile. Because I love when, you know, you're happy, you know. Kind of like when I come home and you look at me and smile. I could have had the worst day in the world. As I'm used to, accustomed to having, you know, perks of, you know, having a job that is kind of demanding at times. You put the smile on my face and that's the day.
Good.
And then what's your biggest turnoff about me?
Goodness.
Because there's so many things to choose from, right?
There's so many to choose from.
You know, I'm the perfect husband. I'm a trophy.
Yeah. No. Just sometimes when it involves our little guy, there are moments where I'm like, can you please help me? And you're always like, what do I need to do? I don't know. I'm like, but it's like, I have to take a step back and be like, hey, can you do this for me really quick? I'm sorry for snapping at you, but can you just, like, go put the bag in the car. Just like, I know he's not going to read my mind. That's what it frustrates me, is like, I need to be like, okay, he doesn't know why the hell I'm snapping at him. But to me, being able to communicate with you, like, if we need help or like if I need help with something, it's like, if I just look at you, like, I want you to know, but at the same time, I'm like, he's going to be like, why the fuck are you looking at me like that? Like, what do you need? Like, that's the one thing that your weakness is just being able to, if I'm struggling with something with him or just need help with something, to me, it's like, I just want you to be like, hey, do you need help? What's going on?
Okay, so you just said it right there. You don't expect me to be a fucking mind reader.
Exactly.
That's where we talk about communication and communicating what it is that you need.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Frustrating as all hell. I know that a lot of guys are feeling that right now. So I would say, so we said biggest turn-ons. Biggest turn-off. We fight, you get passive aggressive like a motherfucker, and it pisses me off something fierce. Because here's my thing. I could be wrong in an argument, and I'm going to still argue my point just to piss you off and be petty. Okay, I do it all the time. It's a red flag of mine that I do, because I know it gets under your skin. Therefore, I do it.
Yeah.
But when you get passive aggressive towards me, and I won't name names,
Yeah.
I'm not going there with you on that. Yeah. But you know, instead of just like communicating, you're just, oh, whatever, I'll do it myself. And like, I laugh because like, sometimes you get mad at me, like I'll be out here and you'll just be like, whatever, I'm going to bed. And then I'll be like, yeah, you should. And then you stomp off like a toddler, you know. And that's where sometimes I'm going to go, do you need me to come tuck you in? Like, you know, like shit like that, you know.
There may or may not be a pillow over his face when he does.
it makes me laugh. All right. So we've gotten that pretty much out of the way, you know, those serious conversations. Want to lighten it up here to end our first episode here. Got some pretty big things coming up on our sports teams. So we got the Winter Classic tomorrow. Notre Dame's going to face who?
Georgia Bulldogs.
Georgia, okay, yes.
Let's go Irish.
And I'm not really a college football guy, so I want to ask you.
You can't cheer for the Bears, because if you cheer for the Bears and they're trying to win, they're going to lose anyways.
No, like, but
I'm just saying.
So here's my thing, you know, Shelby, and I laugh about this sometimes, because like her being passive aggressive about my sports teams, sometimes I like to talk shit about hers just to piss her off. Now, I do feel like her fandom of the Notre Dame Fighting Irish is a fucking cult. It is annoying.
You better watch your next Warriors, because you got family who are Notre Dame born and raised.
But here's the thing, though. You have to look at it from an outside perspective. Okay? And, you know, part of me never wants you to lose, because you're a fucking nightmare when they do. Oh, my God. And I'm going to bring this up for a second, okay? Week two, they play a team from DeKalb called the Northern Illinois Huskies. Now, that was the university that was closest to us, like to me and my family, growing up, when we grew up in Hampshire. But so I had to act like I didn't know what just happened, because if I didn't, she was going to be super mad at me. I had the game on my phone when I'm working, okay? And then I was in the car on my way home. I had flipped it on Hulu on my phone, and I'm listening to the game. And that 65-yarder gets blocked. My first emotion was just to laugh. And then what did I do? I called Shelby, and I said, hey, so I didn't get a chance to see, how did Notre Dame do today? And you were mad as all hell. And boy, was I glad you were not home that weekend, because you would have been fucking unbearable. You were down south with your dad and Jimmy seeing your grandparents.
Oh, and Amboy.
Yeah, you were down south in the state. And I was like, all I could do was laugh. Because I'm like, after they beat Texas A&M, and I was talking, you know, funny, we've talked about DeMarco a couple times. DeMarco is a great friend of mine. We play NHL. We have great conversations about sports and just about everything. He's kind of like my go-to person when I need somebody. But I was joking with him after you guys beat A&M. And I said, man, how funny would it be next week if Northern Illinois pulled off that upset? And I spoke it into existence.
Thing, that was the only game after that that, like, we lost. Because I'm going to say Freeman, he is one of, by far, I know I'm going to get shit for it, but by far the most amazing football coach for that school. Mind you, my dad and I saw him when we went. But just the way he communicates with his team. My favorite still, it had to be, I don't remember what team they were playing, but Freeman, till this day, it still lives rent-free in my head. He told his guys to destroy whoever they came in contact with. And this team, the first, I know for sure that these guys are going to destroy Georgia Bulldogs. Y'all can be like, oh no, they're going to beat, Georgia's going to beat Notre Dame. By far, they could, but Notre Dame has the best defensive line in college football. That's, to me, that's something that's going to help them beat this team. Georgia can talk shit. They're going to be like, oh, well, we can take down Notre Dame. Okay, yes, you can, but at the same time, if you watch these guys play, the second they fuck up, they fix that mistake. A lot of teams will not do that in college football. If they fuck up, that's how they're playing.
So I think, and this is where a lot of the issues come with Notre Dame, right? So this is the first year of the new playoff system. You look at years past, their last time they were in the playoffs, they got demolished by Alabama. Yeah. Now, this is one of the reasons why I hate college football, is that these top teams get these cupcake-ass schedules, like Alabama, like Clemson, like Texas, Oregon, Ohio State, Michigan. All these teams get these cupcake-ass schedules.
Yeah.
And they end up going almost undefeated all year, right?
Yeah.
And then they get to the playoffs.
And they choke.
Like, and I don't want to say Notre Dame chokes, because I don't think it's not a fair assessment to say that they choked versus Alabama.
Yeah.
Okay, they got in as a lower seed. Alabama at the time was one of the toughest football teams to play against. Yeah. Nick Saban,
yeah,
you know, and the wonderful, you know, team that they had down in Alabama that they probably paid.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out Shane Gillis, but you know, you know. It goes without saying that I think this year you guys have a chance to put that to bed, to where you guys, you know, because that was always my biggest proponent with you guys. That was my biggest issue, is you don't, okay, you guys are good. You don't play anybody.
We don't play a lot of, that's the thing, is like our like their schedule, they don't play a lot of teams like Longhorns or Tech or Tennessee or Alabama. But
they're different.
Or,
they're different divisions though.
Exactly.
You guys don't play the SEC.
Coming from Georgia is going to be the hardest one, because this team is what, second or first?
I think they're ranked second in the playoff bracket. Here's my thing.
Yeah.
With Georgia's quarterback being hurt, Beck.
Yeah.
I think you guys may squeak out a win versus Georgia. But you got to remember, Marcus Freeman has the best record against ranked opponents than his predecessor, Brian Kelly. You know, who I joked about at the time, oh, you guys are going to miss him. But, you know, got a little bit of love for Marcus Freeman, being that he was a draft pick of the Bears back in 2009. You know, I look at, you know, and you and I have been sports fans enough, and I don't care if it's the NHL, NFL, college football, baseball even. Yeah. If you got a coach or a manager that knows how to motivate your team to do what it is you want them to do, you're going to have a lot of success. And you're seeing that now with Notre Dame. You know, a lot of these teams, like, that was a huge win for you guys against Texas A&M. I know it was week one. Quarterback didn't play nearly as good as he needed to. But, you know, you guys still found a way to get the job done. So I think it'll be interesting to see what happens against Georgia. Georgia's not going to be your toughest test, though.
No.
Because let's not forget what's looming. The other playoff... Oregon's playing Ohio State.
Oh, yeah.
And y'all have had issues with Ohio State in the past. You know, last year with that walk-off touchdown, you know, that I jokingly played the Titanic music in the ground to, which I thought was hilarious. You know, but you got an undefeated Oregon team. Yeah. You also got some other teams in there that just will beat the crap out of you mentally and physically during the game. Texas being that example. You know, I laugh, and I'm going to make fun of Michigan fans here for a second, because Michigan thought they were going to just roll all over Texas. Mm-hmm. And Texas came into Ann Arbor and punched him in the mouth, and Michigan wasn't able to respond. No. Now, the thing with Ohio State, where you have a lot of the issues, is their head coach. He's their play caller. Ryan Day is not a good coach. Ask DeMarco. He will be the first one to tell you that Ryan Day is not a good coach. You can't lose to basically almost unranked, not unranked, Michigan team. He's had a lot of issues with Michigan. You know, and this is where I've been trying to get back into college football a little bit. You know, University of Illinois has been exciting to watch this year.
Yeah.
You know, so it'll be interesting to see what happens. Georgia versus Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's going to happen, though.
Exactly.
I think there's a lot of what-ifs there. You know, when they were playing Indiana, Riley Leonard, efficient. He's going to have to elevate his game even more than he was. You know, between him and Jeremiah Love in the backfield, they're going to have to elevate their game that much more.
Yeah.
for them to get a shot, you know, for them to have a shot to beat Georgia. It'll be interesting to see kind of what happens with that. Now, got some hockey stuff going on. We got the Winter Classic tomorrow. What about this Blackhawks team excites you?
Honestly, it's since, I mean, yes, we had Luke. He was good. But this coach, I actually like that they moved him up from the Ice Hogs. I know you're not a fan, but
what?
To me, it's, you see the opposite of these guys when they go out now. It's like when they made Foligno captain, it's like there was a switch that flipped in these guys. They were like, what can we do when we get out there that we need to fix? Like, these guys have come back from losing. But yes, they still end up losing. But at the same time, you see them, this drive come back in them.
We call it being competitive.
Exactly. They come back and they want to win. They want to fight. They have kids on this team. Connor Bedard is 19 years old, drafted right out of high school. High school? Right out of high school.
He played for the Regina Pats.
Well,
Yeah.
It's like with him being so young, this temperament or this team, they're still building. People are going to say they're going to be building for years. But if you keep this team the way they are going to build relationships with each other and be like, I know this person's weakness. I'm going to switch. Or it's, to me, it's the way they are growing through each game. You're seeing them switch. If something goes wrong during a period or they are struggling after a period that they're like, okay, what do we need to go into this locker room and sit down and fix so we can come back and win this game in the second and third period?
So I need to address a couple of things here. You know, you said I wasn't a huge fan of the move to bring in Anders Sorensen from Rockford. I wasn't.
No.
Because I look at Rockford as a place where you're supposed to develop these young players. Rockford has been sucky ass this year. Now, granted, they've been better as of late. This isn't the first time they've tried this move either. They fired Joel Quenneville in 2018, promoted Jeremy Colladin. Jeremy Colladin did okay with the team, but then he got to the point where it was time to get fired and be done. It was 3 years later.
Yeah.
Then you bring up Derek King. You do the same thing. You have a little bit of a success. You're still a rebuilding team.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're going, yeah, no, Derek King's no longer the coach. We're going to keep him on as an assistant. We'll bring in Luke Richardson. And I thought Luke Richardson was terrible.
Yeah.
He was not my pick. And here's my thing. So the Blackhawks had a chance to go get Jim Montgomery. They had a chance to go get Bruce Cassidy. Some of these household names, Bruce Boudreaux is another one. And I'm just naming off coaches who have had NHL coaching experiences. You know, not necessarily good by any means. You know, Bruce Boudreaux has had his struggles as well as his, you know, successes, whether it was in Minnesota or Anaheim. You know, Jim Montgomery had, you know, his successes. You know, it's just, it's one of those things that, you know, you're going to have up and down years, but you need somebody who is qualified to coach this team. Would I like to see Joel Quenneville come back? Absolutely, because I think he's what this team needs right now. Paul Maurice in Florida, you know, defending Stanley Cup champs, was another coach that I wanted to come coach for the Blackhawks, Peter Laviolette. You know, where I take issue with this Blackhawks team is Kyle Davidson's put together a shit roster, and instead of building around Connor Bedard, you go out and you get a guy who's 36 years old where he's a goon. He doesn't do much for you in Pat Maroon. And I like Pat Maroon. Don't get me wrong. I like his physicality. I don't really think he brings much to the table anymore. I'm not throwing shade at him. So if you're listening to this, Pat Maroon, I'm not throwing shade at you. I don't want to fight you. But then you go out and you get older guys like TJ Brody, Alec Martinez. You have guys in the pipeline if you want to grow.
Exactly.
Your favorite player, Isaac Phillips.
My homeboy. Love him.
You give Peter Mrazek another contract. And while Peter Mrazek stands on his head for most of the season, that game the other night against Buffalo was awful. Shit. Was awful. And you can argue defensive miscues, this and that. Okay, they're a young team. They're learning. But these line combinations ain't it.
No.
The defensive combinations aren't it.
No, okay. It's like they need to switch up the lines. To me, is what they need to do is they need to switch, bring in.
Yes, it's Soderbloom. Yes.
Bring in more of Soderbloom instead of Mrazek, giving this kid the chance. Yes, he's the backup goalie, but at the same time, if Mrazek's starting to make choices that he's not willing to work on or needs to work on the most, bring this kid in and let him shine, because the other night, he was rocking it. The second we got a penalty that was fucked up and the stupidest penalty ever, that's when our team fell apart.
The Tyler Bertuzzi 5-minute major was completely the turning point in that game last night versus Dallas. 100%.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can argue, oh, it's how the rule's written. Well, there's no intent there. He's not launching himself at the player. He's trying to brace himself against the boards. Exactly. Unfortunately, Colin Blackwell's face is there.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to sort of weather the storm with that.
Mm-hmm.
Could you consider saying Soderbloom should be the starting goalie? Would you have said that last year?
Absolutely not.
Fucking no.
No.
You know... We were, you and I were talking about this in July when free agency opened. They go and get a guy in Laurent Bersois, who still is 6 weeks away, by the way. So that's one of those things, too, where if Mrazek is struggling, and who knows, he had another freaking groin injury. Mm-hmm. You know, so maybe it's time to think about sending him on his way. If Bersois comes back and is healthy and plays lights out, you know, you have that goalie tandem in Soderbloom and Bressois.
Yeah.
Because not only that, you look at your pipeline in Rockford, you got Drew Commesso, who's still absolutely trying to develop. He's in his second season with the Ice Hogs. Not only that, you got a kid in college by the name of Gajan, who is fantastic. You have players in the pipeline. And I know what Kyle Davidson's thinking, trying to bring in some of these older veterans who are going to try and help these younger guys. We're seeing it with Pat Maroon, with Lucas Reichel.
Yeah.
My biggest issue with the Blackhawks right now, when it comes to Lucas Reichel, is how many times can you continue to give a guy a chance? He's had plenty of NHL time. It's time to produce or shut the fuck up and go somewhere else. Now, that's not to say he may need a change of scenery, but it's all going to depend.
Yeah.
So that Winter Classic, going to be so much fun tomorrow to watch.
I'm excited to see
you. I'm not going to force you to talk the Bears, because that'll take up your battery. Will die before I'm done ranting about the Bears. I don't even want to talk about them right now. I think right now I'd say we've had some good discussions. I hope you guys think so as well. We're going to try and do this once a week, but I think that's a good place to end it.
We would love to do a Q&A if you guys have any good questions for us to answer between each other. It could be a relationship. It could be kids. It could be, yes, we've only been parents for almost a year, but at the same time, if you are struggling with a toddler or just need advice or like how to work on things with a relationship or just family things, we would love to have that Q&A for you guys. So.
With that being said, I'm James.
I'm Shelby.
We'd like to thank you all for listening. Tune in to us the next time we're on, and have a happy new year, everybody.
Bye, guys.